WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? Hey, happy, happy hump day. It is Wednesday, September 9th, 2015, and I am your host of WKAR's Current Sports, Al Martin. We've got a great show in store for you all as we continue to prep you all for this Saturday's matchup between the Michigan State Spartans and the Oregon Ducks at Spartan Stadium. That's right, folks. That is going to be one intriguing matchup. And we will chat with Justin Wise today. He's a sports editor for the Oregon Daily Emerald, who has been following this team in and out throughout preseason training camp. Of course, he recapped, you know, last week's game as Oregon took on Eastern Washington. Justin knows all things Oregon Ducks, okay? He's going to get us prepped when it comes to the opposition with Oregon taking on Michigan State. We'll also chat about Venus and Serena Williams. That's right. It was a sister act at the U.S. Open yesterday in New York. And boy, oh boy, what a match it was. Fun to watch. Both sisters going at it for the umpteenth time in both of their respective careers. Was that fun or what? Fun stuff. We'll chat about that. Also, a prep coach has been suspended after that incident out in Texas at a high school football game in which a referee was targeted intentionally by not one but two players on the football field. Disturbing stuff there. And also, the NBA has decided to make changes finally to their playoff seeding. All of that and so much more. Call 517-355-9527 to be a part of the show. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners again for this September 9th. Michigan's primary target for its 2016 basketball recruiting class is poof, gone. UD Jesuits Cassius Winston announced on Twitter this morning that he is no longer considering the maize and blue. He tweeted, quote, "My list of schools is now down to three: Michigan State, Pittsburgh, and Stanford. In no particular order, University of Michigan is no longer an option." All right, Raji Davis capped a crazy night with a game-winning sacrifice fly in the 13th, sending home James McCann and sending the Tigers to their first set of back-to-back wins in nearly 3 weeks with an 8-7 victory over the Tampa Bay Rays on Tuesday night at Comerica Park. Kyle Ryan, the Tigers' record-tying 10th pitcher of the night, entered the game with one out in the 12th and earn the win with 1 1/3 scoreless innings. Now, with that, the Tigers won consecutive games for the first time since August 19th and the 20th. Wow, that's a long time. Serena Williams defeated Venus Williams, her sister, in three back-and-forth sets on Tuesday night, advancing to the semifinals 6-2, 6-1, and 6-3. She'll face Italy's Roberto Vinci, currently ranked 43rd in the world, who beat Frances Christina Malavonovic 6-3, 5-7, and 6-4. Now, with the win against Vinci, Williams would play for the U.S. Open title in a grand slam of this year's major tournaments, the first since Steffi Graf in 1988. History on the line for Serena. She's unbelievable. All right, folks, the bidding for Floyd Mayweather's ongoing services in boxing is underway. He confirmed yesterday, with only one sticking point, his lack of willingness to engage in the talks in the first place. Now, Mayweather confirmed that he has received, quote, "crazy numbers at me to stay in the sport, nine figures up point." That's a lot of moolah. Still, the 38-year-old Grand Rapids native continues to insist that his welterweight title defense Saturday against Andre Berto will be his career finale. An assistant coach has been suspended, and legal action could be pending in the wake of an ugly incident during a Texas high school football game last week in which two players deliberately targeted a referee. Now, video shows two players from John Jay High School, senior Mike Marino and sophomore Victor Rojas, deliberately pinning back judge Robert Watts in the closing minutes of the game against Marble Falls. Now, earlier in the game, two John Jay players were ejected after throwing punches. That's according to the San Antonio Express News. Now, an investigation by the Northside Independent School District resulted in the suspension of assistant coach Mac Breed for allegedly saying, quote, "That guy needs to pay for cheating us," referring to, of course, the referee. I have more on that story later on. The NBA Board of Governors unanimously voted to approve changes to a playoff seeding that qualification procedures are effective with the 2015-2016 season. The league announced that yesterday. Now, as part of the modifications, the eight playoff teams in each conference will be seeded in order of their regular season record. Most recently, every division winner was guaranteed a top four seed in its respective conference, regardless of its record, but did not receive home court advantage if its playoff opponent had a better record. New York Jets receiver Brandon Marshall said Tuesday that many players in the NFL believe that race played a role in Patriots quarterback Tom Brady's four-game suspension being lifted. He said, quote, "The race car. There are a lot of players out there that believe that white players, specifically at the quarterback position, are treated differently." Marshall made his comments as a part of a panel discussion on Showtime's Inside the NFL. And lastly, with an estimated $95 billion expected to be bet mostly illegal on NFL and college football this year, research shows that a legal sports betting market in the United States would be the largest in the world and could potentially generate as much as an annual revenue in the NFL itself. That's a lot of money. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we chat about today or anything that happens to be on your sports noggin, you know that number. Call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's go. Is up, beautiful people. I tell you, it's a fantastic day. It is hump day, Wednesday, September 9th, 2015. I am your host of WKAR's Current Sports, Al Martin, and we've got a fantastic hour in store for all of you out there. Later on in the hour, as I stated at the top, to begin our intro on the show, we'll chat about the NBA finally making changes to its playoff seeding. That's certainly long overdue. Also, Brandon Marshall citing race as a factor in the Tom Brady ruling by the judge. Of course, Judge Berman deciding to say, Tom Brady will play this year. I think you acted a little bit too harshly, Roger Goodell. So we'll chat about that. Also, we'll be inviting Justin Wise, sports editor for the Oregon Daily Emerald. Justin, of course, he's been covering the Oregon Ducks for a while now, and he knows all things Oregon Ducks, and he'll give us a preview on the other spectrum of things when breaking down what we will see from the Oregon Ducks this Saturday night, as the biggest college football game of the week will be taking place right here in East Lansing at Spartan Stadium, 8 p.m. primetime television on ABC as the Spartans play host to the Oregon Ducks. So you don't want to miss Justin Wise as he'll join us to break down all things Oregon and MSU. But to start the show, of course, I wanted to start with that little montage there. Of course, that's Will Smith and his famed instrumental right there, Just the Two of Us. He actually sampled that track by, I believe, Bill Withers. Bill Withers was the first one to actually produce that track, and then he kind of remixed it into a Just the Two of Us hip-hop track for him and his son at the time, back in the day when he was a little tyke. I believe maybe that was Jaden. I think that was the other son. I don't think that was Jaden Smith back in the day. I have to check on that one. But anyway, fame track. And, you know, it's interesting because, I love that track because, that's a track that, really, when you talk about family, that's one of the first songs that come to mind. It's one of my favorite songs when thinking of my fam. And last night, we saw a clash within the fam between Serena Williams and Venus Williams, two of the most decorated athletes that we've ever seen, that America has ever, ever produced in those two. And I really think that when you look at what those sisters have been able to do in the world of tennis, they are by far the most decorated siblings in all of sports that America has produced. There's no other. I mean, looking at the amount of majors that both Serena and Venus have won, the amount of championships they have won, the accolades, I mean, it is absolutely through the roof when looking at what these two sisters have been able to do in their respective careers. Unbelievable stuff. And it was a joy watching that last night, sitting on my couch, because I really haven't sat down and watched tennis like that in a very, very long time. But anytime Serena and Venus happen to meet on the tennis court, I stop what I'm doing and I am locked in and tuned in to see what these two amazing individuals are going to do. And last night, I think out of all the matches I've ever seen between these two sisters, last night was really the most intriguing one because we saw a lot of emotion. You heard the announcers throughout the entire match talk about how, Serena was very emotional, as opposed to other matchups between her sister Venus. And, Serena, we've seen in the past whenever she's gone against her older sister, she's been a bit reserved. She doesn't want to, rub in, anything on a certain point. If she does get a point on her sister, she doesn't want to rub it in by yelling or showing a lot of emotion. But last night, I mean, you saw Serena come out. She ended up winning the first set. Then in the second set, Venus comes back and dominates. Then in that third set, we saw Serena just sort of raise her game to another level and pull that out. So looking at how it was such an even match after two sets, I mean, that emotion was something that we haven't really seen Serena, as I just stated, really just protrude out against her sister. But, she let her hair hang loose last night. And, it was funny looking at the interview afterwards and talking about, Serena Williams when she addressed what her sister has meant to her and her game. Serena talked about how she is the kindest person that she knows and how that, if there's any tennis player out there who pushes Serena to be a better player, it is her sister because she knows her so well. And they push one another. I mean, they certainly bring out the best of one another whenever they go at it. And it was just really cool to watch. Anytime you see those two individuals, Serena and Venus Williams, meet on the same court. Two sisters who were raised in Compton, California. Of course, their father, he pushed them to learn the game of tennis, to fine tune their skills. And now both, Serena right now, arguably, I mean, there's no argument right here right now when looking at her game. She is, bar none, the best tennis player in the world. At one point, that was Venus. She has now dropped to about, 23rd in the world. But Venus is still an unbelievable competitor. And we saw that on display last night. And what I really liked about it, I don't know, looking at, because, again, I always tune in when both of them go at it. In the past, whenever I've seen Serena take on Venus, you kind of see like this aura and this sort of dialogue from the announcers, from those involved, even watching the tournament, in the venue. You see almost this dialogue of, oh, man, this, I can only imagine what's going through the heads of Venus and Serena having to go against your sibling. Almost like an emotion of sadness that you got to play your sister in a major and that one of you guys have to lose, But, last night, it was the first time that I had not seen that sadness. It was celebrated that these two were going against each other. Hey, there's going to be a winner. There's going to be a loser. But boy, oh boy, is it fun to watch these two go at it. It was the first time that you didn't feel that emotion of sadness that, oh man, I feel bad for Serena or I feel bad for Venus that she has to beat her sister. I can only imagine what's going through their heads. That dialogue was gone. And thank goodness, because again, looking at what both have been able to do, I mean, why do you feel sorry for them? I mean, you should be celebrating it. I mean, these are two sisters playing at the U.S. Open, one with a possibility to make incredible history. And if the other one moves on, I mean, there's nothing sad about it. So it was just fun to watch, man, and we really saw something special last night. And it was for the first time in a while, as I, you know, going back to my statement about me finally sitting down and watching tennis for the first time in a long time. Again, it was the first time in a while for me that I felt as though the sports world just stopped here in America and we tuned in to watch tennis. That has not happened in a long time, folks, and it happened last night. It was fun stuff. So if you caught it, I'd love to get your thoughts on Serena Williams and Venus Williams. If you checked out the match last night, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And Serena now moves on in the U.S. Open with a chance. And then she is certainly a heavy favorite now. I mean, you know, Venus Williams was going to be her toughest competition. And we saw what she did in that third set, able to, again, raise her game to another level and just move on. So now Serena will be a heavy favorite moving on in the tournament. And, again, she has an opportunity to complete the calendar slam, something that hasn't happened since 1988 when Steffi Graf accomplished that very own feat. Now, we haven't seen much of Steffi Graf. I mean, I haven't seen anything of her weighing in on Serena Williams possibly accomplishing this. I mean, I heard from you know, last night the announcers talk about how Steffi Graf, she's a very private person, but she is rooting for Serena Williams to accomplish that feat because it's been long overdue. So really cool stuff, though, and I'm certainly rooting for Serena, as I'm sure many of you guys out there are as well. Let's invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. Yeah, one thing I really respect about the Venus and Serena pairing is how sportsmanlike they are. Now, I'm only half kidding here. When my brother and I used to play tennis against each other, we both were terrible. But we would smash rackets. If the other person won, you'd run off the court. And, you know, it's just nice to see this camaraderie and this friendship between sisters at such an elite level, because they keep going back and forth. It was such a great match last night or yesterday, and I was happy to see Serena get the win at the end of the day, because I do hope she can create and or finish this calendar slam and really make history by doing so.
Yes, certainly. And going back to my statement about, you know, these two being the most decorated siblings that America has produced in the world of sports. I mean, that's pretty cool stuff. I can't think of any other siblings who have accomplished what these two have accomplished in their respective sports. I, you know, the only one to really come to mind is what maybe Eli Manning and Peyton Manning, you know, Tiki Barber and Rondé Barber in football. But other than that, I mean, I don't think that there are any other siblings that are close to doing or have done what Venus and Serena have done in the world of tennis. No other ones can come to mind for me.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I actually just pulled up a list of that. And, you know, the Harbaughs are pretty impressive. Then you've got, like you said, Tiki and Rondé Barber. And then you've got the Mannings. I think you can make a legitimate debate
for the Mannings. I don't even think Eli and Peyton are close, because they, I mean, they have Super Bowls. But looking at individual accomplishments, Venus and Serena, I mean, it's unbelievable looking at the amount of majors those two have between one another. I mean, to me, Venus and Serena are like having like a Walter Payton and like a Joe Montana. If Walter Payton and Joe Montana were somehow related, you know what I mean? They are that good. Eli and Peyton are great, don't get me wrong, but the dominance that they have displayed, they haven't come close to what Venus and Serena have done in the world of tennis.
Well, I'd agree with you. I think the Williams are better than the Mannings collectively, and when you compare them to the competition, Serena is the Michael Jordan of, or the, you know, Joe Montana, who's my best quarterback ever, the Joe Montana of tennis. So when you have that, even if you've got any sister that plays in that field, you might be the best tandem ever, but let alone a sister who's so good and so accomplished
and
as well.
Let's not forget here, during the early 2000s, Venus was the best tennis player in the world. She was dominant. You know what I mean? So now, you know, seeing Serena come up, who's the younger sister, I mean, it's just amazing how consistent these two are. And still, with Venus being up in age now and being, you know, the older sister, she's also dealing with that autoimmune disorder that we talked about. I remember last year here on the show and still battling through that. But still to be among the top 20, that's still remarkable for Venus. So, I mean, both of these players have been the best in the world with Serena now holding that crown. That's something that you can't say for any other sibling pair in all of American sports.
No, it's not. Well, my research has illuminated another candidate, and you do have to give these guys credit, because I say these guys, there are six brothers. The Sutters in the NHL, combined, they had 86 seasons.
That's
behind
not fair,
them.
Though.
It's not
it's
fair.
It's six
it's
of them.
Six.
Come on, man.
It's still funny. It's still
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, it is.
No,
yeah,
but the best tandem, without a doubt. And even at the end of the day, no, I still put the Williams head and shoulders above anybody else, because when you look at the accomplishments, like you said, both have been the best players in the world. Both are in some of the best tennis or women's tennis players of all time. You can make a debate that probably Venus is top 10, top 5. So Serena, of course, number 1. I think that's unanimous for you and I. So, yeah, you've got to give it to them at the end of the day.
Yeah, certainly. And Serena, I mean, she's the most dominant figure in sports right now when looking at, you know, the entire spectrum of things here. I mean, no one is dominating their respective sport like Serena is doing. And, man, but that was fun to watch, though. I mean, because Venus, she put up a valiant effort last night. Fun to watch. Again, folks, your phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I got to get to this story now because it has really been on my mind ever since I saw the video. Now, there are new revelations and new additions to this story since it occurred last week Friday during a high school football game. And just to read an excerpt, this is coming from Yahoo Sports. An assistant coach has been suspended and legal action could be pending in the wake of an ugly incident during a Texas high school football game in which two players deliberately targeted a referee. Now, video shows two players from John Jay High School, senior Mike Marino and sophomore Victor Rojas, deliberately hitting back judge Robert Watts in the closing minutes of a game against Marble Falls. And I don't know if you guys have seen this video, but you can clearly see it on the video. It's everywhere online. The back judge is clearly deliberately targeted. He gets hit, his hat flies off, he goes straight to the ground, and then you see the second player come in and just pile right on top of him, helmet first. Disturbing stuff. Now, looking at this, an investigation by the Northside Independent School District resulted in the suspension of assistant coach Mac Breed for allegedly saying, quote, "That guy needs to pay for cheating us." Wow. Now, going on here, I mean, you know, looking at this game, you know, this is something that first off, I immediately shook my head and said that these two guys do not need to play football ever again. Anytime you deliberately target a referee, even, I mean, when we've had segments on this show about referee abuse, referees go through, and I know for a fact, I couldn't be a referee in sports because they go through a lot of abuse, verbally and at times, as we see in this case, physically. And for me, I really feel like anytime you step out of the boundaries of sports and take it to the street, as I like to call it, and try to purposefully injure someone within the game or away from it, then you are crossing the line. These are kids in high school. They know what you're supposed to do and not to do, even if this assistant coach, Mac Breed, so, and if this is found to be true, again, allegedly he made the comment, this guy needs to pay for cheating us. If he did make this comment, hey, he really needs to, you know, have legal action taken upon him. But even as a high school player, I tried to really look at this story and say, okay, you know, when I saw these new developments this morning, I looked at it and said, okay, if I'm a high school football player and my assistant coach tells me to go out there and intentionally try and inflict harm on the referee, I got common sense. I have common sense. I'm not going to go out there and do that. I know right from wrong at the age of when I am a sophomore in high school. So there is faults in multiple ways here. I think these two students really need to be punished. I saw that they had been suspended from the school. They had been let go by the team, and deservingly so. And they need their names out there. I think that, you know, again, looking at the two names here, Mike Marino and Victor Rojas, even though they are in high school, you know right from wrong. And you gotta know what not to do and not to do, what to do and not to do, even when your assistant coach may have ordered this to happen.
This is just opprobrious. I couldn't bear to watch that video.
Crazy.
I mean, I watched it, but the more and more you watch it, you think of the serious consequences that could have occurred. Fortunately, the referee wasn't permanently damaged or anything like that, but that's a definite possibility. The lower back is the most vulnerable part of the body, of the skeleton. It's got the least muscle around it. So targeting that, this ref could be in a wheelchair if those players had hit him harder. And maybe they could have, but it looks like they went pretty all in to me. I'm sorry. I know they're high scores, but I say jail, jail, jail for all three of them. Not forever or anything like that.
Juvie. I would say juvie maybe.
Juvie for the sophomore, of course.
Legal action has to be taken upon here.
Yes, it does.
Without it, I think we both are in agreement upon that. And this is just a sad case of sports being taken too seriously. Point blank, period. I mean, we see it so often where coaches, players, They don't realize that you are playing a game. Sports are meant to be fun at the high school level. And anytime that you step out of those boundaries and, again, decide to inflict harm on someone because you aren't happy with the way a game is going, you got problems. You need to see someone. This assistant coach, again, if it's proven that hey, that he delivered this order, he, again, needs legal action taken upon him. And I really think he needs a psychological evaluation from somebody, because that's not normal to be, you know, to get that serious about a high school football game where you go to that extremity. And even for these kids, these kids are not being taught how to play football the right way. Point blank, period. And I feel as though, and I see it so often in high school sports, and even further in the youth level of sports, where coaches and players, they don't realize why you play the game. The foundation of sports is to play it for the fun of it. It's supposed to be fun. And that's honestly, Isaac, I told this story when I first got the job here at WKAR. I grew up, I thought I was going to be a football player. I loved football growing up. It was the first sport introduced to me when I was about, you know, 7 years old. So my dad decided to enlist me into the PAL Football League over at Cody High School on the west side of Detroit. So I tell you what, we go over there, we meet the coach, seems like a cool guy. You know, I try out, I make the team. Like, you know, my first official practice happened to be the week after when I tried out. My first day of practice, I kid you not, I go to practice, I'm in pads, I get my helmet on. And I line up. I guess he had me playing, I think, on the offensive line. I don't know any of the plays, don't know anything. It's my first day of practice. I line up wrong, and the coach comes over to me, grabs my helmet, and shoves my head in the dirt, curses, and saying, "You're lining up wrong." After that, man, I got spooked. I'm a 7-year-old kid. I go home. I'm like, "Dad, this happened." My dad goes up the next day to practice, and he gets into a confrontation with the coach, the head coach of the team. He's ticked off, and that was my last time playing football. I said, "Dad, I'm hanging it up. I'm not playing this game ever again. I'm playing basketball now." And that's how, really, I came to have more of a liking, to as far as playing-wise goes, for basketball over football. These are young kids, and I feel as though, you know, far too often that we have coaches. There are plenty that do it the right way, but every once in a while, we see rotten apples in the bunch that don't get it and take winning far too serious. This isn't the NFL, folks. This isn't the NFL. As a youth coach, you got to realize that you have a responsibility of molding young kids in a way that you do not deter them from playing.
And we talk about football all the time, and of course, you've got the concussion worries, but there are so many benefits. And one that D.A. Jones brought up when he was on the show, and I really agree with him, is discipline. It teaches you self-discipline, how to work, things like that, how to be part of a team, how to respond to adversity. these kids didn't learn any of that clearly. I don't know who taught them, but they were taught wrong. And to play devil's advocate just for a second, though, for assistant coach Mack Breed, it's alleged.
Right.
It is alleged.
Right.
These could just be bad apples, the kids, because that's not alleged. We saw the tape. That is not alleged. What he said, this guy needs to pay for cheating us, that is alleged. So maybe these kids are just placing the blame on somebody else, but it doesn't look good either way. And it's another bad portrayal for football, because football, of course, there's all these worries and concerns people have about football being a violent sport and that violence carrying into realms that it shouldn't. And this is another example. And then the other part about this is just, you know, I mean, when it comes to these players, when it comes to this ref, both you and I played high school sports. The last thing you can do where you cross the line is to lay a hand on the ref. To let alone hit him, that's just incomprehensible to me. I can't even think about that.
And we saw not too long ago where a referee actually died due to, you know, he was reffing a soccer match somewhere, and he was actually punched in the face due to, you know, a player who was not happy with the way that, you know, the referee was managing the game. So it happens far too often, man. And referee abuse, it is real, man, and it happens all the time. And we'll keep you posted on the new developments as this story moves on. I'm sure legal action will be taken upon. And again, you know, I saw even a report that the kid said that there were racial slurs that the referee might have stated. I don't care. You don't put your hands on another individual. That point blank, period. So anyway, let's hear our first break. When we come back, we'll be chatting with Justin Wise, who is the sports editor for the Oregon Daily Emerald. You don't want to miss our chat as he gives us a preview of the Michigan State and Oregon big matchup this Saturday night at Spartan Stadium. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Got to remind you all that, hey, in about an hour, actually, I'll be chatting with Anthony Iani, who is the, again, he's a former MSU men's basketball player under head coach Tom Izzo, who has done some great things away from the hardwood after his career was said and done at Michigan State University. He is now a motivational speaker who has been traveling to various high schools throughout the nation. He's a representative for the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. He also has been preaching autism awareness, as he was, of course, diagnosed when he was a young child, and has really done some remarkable things in both of those avenues. So if you want to get a chance to meet Anthony Iani and myself today here at the WKAR-TV studios, just show up. We actually had to move our time up from 3 o'clock to 2:30 today because Anthony has to pick up his little one from school. So we graciously adhered to that request from Anthony. So it's going to be a great time sitting down with Ant, though. We actually had him here on the radio show not too long ago, and he was fantastic through our radio airwaves, and we expect nonetheless on this week's Current Sports TV. Well, I tell you what, folks, I can't wait. I can't wait for Saturday night here at Spartan Stadium. Of course, Isaac and myself, we will be at Spartan Stadium covering that Michigan State and Oregon matchup, the biggest game when looking at the entire slate of college football for Saturday, as the Spartans have a chance at redemption, looking at what occurred last year in Eugene, in which the Oregon Ducks, with Heisman Trophy winner Marcus Mariota, they were able to pull away in that second half. But the Spartans stayed with them throughout most of that game. It was a fun game, but one that the Spartans had been circling on their schedule ever since they walked away from Oregon as losers. So, again, you know, they will play Vernon Adams and company this weekend, and I invite right now a man who knows all things Ducks. He is actually the sports editor for the Oregon Daily Emerald. Justin Wise now joins us. Justin, thanks so much for being a part of the show.
Yeah, and thank you. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely not. Now, Justin, I want to dive right into it because, again, you cover the Ducks. You are around this team, talking with them and interviewing them. First off, want to talk about new quarterback transfer from Eastern Washington, Vernon Adams. What sort of quarterback is Vernon?
I mean, really, Vernon is exactly what he was advertised to be. I mean, at the FCS level, he broke records at Eastern Washington. He had over 10,000 total yards at the FCS level. And then the first game, I think there was a little anxiety to see how he actually fared. And, I mean, he was playing against his old team. He was playing against another FCS opponent, which he had played for 3 years. But he really is a type of razzle-dazzle, dual-threat option that definitely for the Ducks offense is the perfect fit. They looked in mid-season form on Saturday. So I think he passed the test, especially for fans who may be a little anxious considering they're losing a guy in Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, and comparing those two, again, I don't think that Vernon Adams is going to be a Marcus Mariota. I think that Marcos, in my opinion, had, you know, a better arm. He was so elusive. And I see sort of the same things when it comes to Vernon as far as putting the ball, you know, on the ground. But in which ways are these two quarterbacks different?
I think Vernon kind of has this extra motor. Maybe he seems to, at least in the first game, he did say to the media on Monday that he doesn't like to run the ball, as maybe his play suggests. But it looks like he is more willing to take off with the football. I think Marcus Mariota doesn't get enough credit for actually how poised he was in the pocket these last couple of years. Mm-hmm. He really liked to stay in there and throw the ball downfield. I think Vernon Adams has more of a high gear motor, just wanting to just break a play, just move on. It seems like his burst is faster. I don't know if he's faster than Marcus Mariota. Marcus Mariota was a very fast quarterback as well. But it seemed like in that first game, he's got this burst. He's got this quickness, sort of energy about himself. So it'll be definitely really interesting to see how he plays against Michigan State.
Yeah, certainly looking forward to it. And I've even heard comparisons, at least from here in East Lansing. Mark D'Antonio was asked during his press conference yesterday morning, in what ways does Vernon Adams resemble Russell Wilson? Do you buy that comparison? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, I thought we'll find out, I guess. We'll have to wait and see. I mean, I still want to see more of how he plays, but from seeing him on Saturday, there are a lot of traits about him that I think you can relate to Russell Wilson. I think he probably doesn't get enough credit for his arm strength as well. He was willing to make those downfield passes. He was willing to thread the needle at times. So he definitely has a lot of confidence about himself, and he can take off with the ball and run. So that offense obviously scored 61 points. They did not take a step back with losing Marcus Mariota, obviously. So I think we'll have to wait and see. But I trust that Mark D'Antonio knows what he's talking about when he says that he reminds him a bit of Russell Wilson.
Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Justin Wise, sports editor for the Oregon Daily Emerald. Now, I got to ask you, Justin, looking at that first game, Oregon really rolling over Eastern Washington, but they were able to put up 42 points against that Oregon defense. 61-42 is the final, with Oregon pulling that out. I know Vernon did take a big hit, a hit that many thought was a bit intentional. What'd you see from that play?
Yeah, I mean, it looked, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but came out this morning, actually, that the Eastern Washington defender who made that hit was actually suspended by the school for this upcoming game. And I think it looked, Vernon Adams was obviously going down, he was sliding, and he took a late hit. I mean, it was a targeting hit. It was, by the book, a penalty and something a player gets, you know, ejected for. And based on it, what I saw, it looked like Vernon was just trying to make a play. He went down, and I think with a guy like that, with a motor such as his trying to make a play all the time, I think maybe that will be something that he has to think about in the future as for when he takes off with the ball, because he's going to be susceptible to hits like that. Obviously, that one was illegal, but that's what I saw, that he just was going down, sliding, maybe a bit too late in some senses, but definitely was an illegal hit. Definitely was a tough blow to take.
Yeah, and we did see that this morning that Eastern Washington has suspended. That is actually Rover back John Kriefels. They suspended him for Saturday's game at Northern Iowa. Now, and looking at that score, that's something that really stands out to me because I really believe, Justin, that if Michigan State is going to win this game, they have to score, for me, I believe, about 40 points. That's my target for Michigan State. And Eastern Washington, they were able to put up a bunch of points, you know, against Oregon. What is up with that Oregon defense? How do you evaluate them coming into this game?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting test. Oregon's secondary lost three senior starters from last year, and they were playing a unit that had a lot of redshirt freshmen that were getting some of their, you know, first reps of their collegiate career in a lot of senses, and they gave up 438 yards passing, and I think especially Connor Cook had a lot. He gave the experienced unit last year a lot of trouble. Connor Cook had a great game last year for the most part, and so I think that's going to be a very interesting test to watch, giving up 42 points exactly. If Oregon is to have a shot at playing against Michigan State, their defense has to play somewhat of a role in that. They can't just expect the offense to do what it did against Eastern Washington. So I think there's plenty of reason to have some skepticism about this Oregon secondary, especially going against an experienced quarterback in Connor Cook, because a lot of them are very inexperienced.
What you have been hearing out of the Oregon football camp throughout this week, I'm very intrigued to know, Justin, because you know, I'm always interested to see what both teams are focusing on as far as, you know, what schemes they want to run. Of course, they can't be too specific. They love to have, you know, a lot of mystery within camp. They may give you, you know, coach speak, as I like to call it. But at the same time, what do you think Oregon is focusing on in matching Michigan State upon on Saturday night? And what sort of offense and defense will we see from Oregon looking at this matchup?
I think they'll probably get a little more creative. I think the defense did stay basically in maybe more simple and basic alignments. So I think they'll get more creative with that. I think a lot of it, like I said, was just first game trying to roll out just everything for a lot of new guys, young guys. But I haven't heard too many specifics of what they're trying to do. I think a lot of last year was just really trying to establish the tempo against Michigan State. You know, I think especially when you're considering that fast tempo that Oregon runs, if they can establish it early on, they become a very hard team to face. But if they don't, it'll become a really tough test for them. So I think that's really what, based off last year, especially seeing how the matchup fared, I think the defense is going to get a little more creative. I think you can expect the offense to as well. So I think it just probably means that they'll get a little more creative from what I've heard this week.
Yeah, creative is certainly Mark Helfrich's middle name, I tell you that. Now, all right, before we get you out of here, Justin, I want to chat about Royce Freeman. Of course, you know, he's a talented running back who had, 1,300 yards last year, 18 touchdowns. He's very, very talented. What's your analysis of Royce coming into this year?
I think Royce, I know I saw something like he's a 33-1 odds on getting back to the Heisman for another Oregon Duck and a Heisman candidate, and I think that's total legitimacy there for him. He is an absolute stud. I remember last year just seeing him. The guy's he's 18 years old, and just the build that he has, it's unbelievable. He's just very fast. He can, you know, he can't be tackled by just one guy. I think he's going to have a very, very good season, and especially he got 21 carries in the first game, and I'm thinking that he's going to get about 20 carries a game this season. So I think that 1,300 mark that he had last year, it's only going to go up from there. He's going to be the main feature back. He's got weapons behind him at the running back position as well, but he's an absolute stud, and he's just a true sophomore. So he's got a couple of years left in a Ducks uniform. He's going to be very good this year, and I think he'll have a big game against Michigan State as well.
Yes, he is so talented. So hypothetically, Justin, I mean, if Oregon, of course, Michigan State is a favorite this year in this year's game. If Oregon does lose this game against MSU, how do you think the rest of the season will pan out, and do you think they still will have a legitimate shot at possibly making the college football playoff?
Yeah, I think they do. I think there's two sides to it. You know, you start out with an early loss, and that's never good for a season's hopes, considering you just want to get off to a great start. But I also think if you play Michigan State, the fifth-ranked team in the nation, it really gives a test to a guy like Vernon Adams and to the inexperienced secondary. It really will do a lot of good for them going into the Pac-12 season. If they get away with losing maybe no more than one Pac-12 game this season, I expect them to make the Pac-12 championship. The Pac-12 North is a little weak this year. And so I think if they make that Pac-12 championship And if they were to lose in this Michigan State game, that can really just at least kind of, you know, prepare them for the Pac-12 schedule. So I think the college football playoff is definitely a reasonable goal for this season, because if they are able to win that Pac-12 championship, I think that they will have a definite at least cause to make that college football playoff.
Yeah, and you think, I mean, if they do lose to Michigan State, again, as you just stated, I mean, they'll lose to a top five team. I mean, you would hope that the committee will look upon that and say, okay, well, I mean, it's Michigan State, for goodness sake. I mean, you're looking at last year, Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech, I mean, and they still were able to make the college football playoff. So I think there's different variances when it comes to strength of schedule at the end of the day.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if you're looking at Michigan State last year, I mean, if they had a couple bounces go their way against Ohio State, you would have looked at a one-loss team, and I'm sure they would have been the team from the Big Ten making the college football playoff as well. So I think, especially now with the fact that you can have four teams, you know, having this early season loss to a team such as Michigan State on the road will really not have too much of an effect on them, unless they have, you know, a bad loss in the Pac-12, and then another team has a better resume. But I think it's hard to really, you know, see too much negative in, you know, going to Michigan State and playing a good game and losing by, say, no more than 10 points. I think that can't be too much negative if they were to lose one or two games this season.
Justin Wise, sports editor for the Oregon Daily Emerald. Now, Justin, before we get you out of here, of course, I can't let you go without you giving us a prediction. What do you think is going to happen throughout this game? Give us a score, and give us a guy who you think is really going to be a breakout player for the Oregon Ducks this weekend.
All right. My prediction right now is 45-35 Michigan State. I do think they have the experience there. I do think Connor Cook is going to have a big game as far as just going against Oregon's secondary. I think this is going to be a very competitive game. I think just Oregon's offense is going to play well, and I think Royce Freeman is going to be that breakout player for them. I think I see him running for well over 100 yards, getting the ball about 20 times, and really kind of taking that offense on his back, so to speak, in certain situations for this game. I expect it to go down to all 60 minutes of it, be very, very competitive, but I think Michigan State will maybe run away with it. Maybe Oregon turns over the ball late, something like that. But I expect this to be a very competitive game, but I do think Michigan State's going to take it.
Okay, so big game for Royce Freeman, even against that highly touted defensive line in Michigan State, huh?
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. But I still think the way Oregon's unit runs, I think he'll be able to have a big game.
Well, I tell you what, I'm excited to see Royce in action. I'm excited to see Vernon Adams. I'm just excited to see the overall atmosphere here in East Lansing. Justin, we appreciate your time. Again, Justin Wise, sports editor for the Oregon Daily Emerald. Folks out there who are listening, Justin, how can they read your work?
Well, we are on dailyemerald.com. So if you go there and you just check out our sports section and click on football, you'll get everything for us as far as football coverage and any other sport as well. So we'll be at dailyemerald.com.
All right, Justin, thanks so much for your time, my man.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, let's put a bow on this one. Let's hit our second break. And when we come back, we will chat about the NBA making changes to its playoff seeding, and also Brandon Marshall citing race as a factor in the Tom Brady ruling. All that and more right here on WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. About 10 minutes left in the show. If you still want to call in and give your thoughts on anything, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We just finished chatting with Justin Wise, who is the sports editor for the Oregon Daily Emerald. He gave us a synopsis of the Oregon Ducks and what we can expect from the Ducks when looking at their matchup this Saturday night at Spartan Stadium against the Michigan State football team. What'd you think of that convo, Isaac? I mean, you know, he expects Royce Freeman to have a big game. He's still taking Michigan State to win that game by 10 points. I believe he said, 45-35 is going to be the final of that game. What do you think about Royce Freeman running on that Michigan State defensive line?
Well, I think Michigan State's defensive line was one of the few things that looked good in the defensive side. Well, actually, it was about half the defense that looked good, half that didn't against Western Michigan. But Michigan State's defensive line definitely looked good, especially against the run. I still think we could see a good game from Freeman because he's an explosive back. It just takes, as we saw with Ezekiel Elliott against Virginia Tech, it just takes one 80-yard run to make a good game. So I think he'll have a decent game. I thought that his prediction really surprised me. I thought he was going to pick Oregon, and picking Michigan State by double digits, putting up 45, it really shows me that he thinks Oregon's defense has a lot more flaws than Michigan State's, and Oregon's offense is still finding their gears to grind.
Obviously, I mean, anytime Eastern Washington puts up 42 points against you,
yeah,
that's a lot of points. So, and I mentioned yesterday how Connor Cook has to be looking at it and saying, oh, wow, we could really do some things against this Oregon defense. I mean, you know, so I really think that Connor Cook is going to have a big game. And Royce Freeman, I mean, he's a guy who was a stud last year, certainly a stud. And, you know, he had a monster freshman year. And I think that they use him in so many variances in the offense. I mean, he's so versatile that I think he will eventually, you know, have pretty good numbers. When you, at the end of the day, when that game is all said and done, you look at the numbers of Royce Freeman, you'll say, wow, he had a great game. But as far as him just running through that defensive line, that's not going to happen. No. He's a guy who can beat you in multiple different ways. So, for me, I really think that Vernon Adams is going to have a big game this weekend because of that secondary. We saw a lot of holes in that secondary, a lot of guys moving into new positions on that Michigan State secondary. I think that Vernon Adams has to be looking at that. Both quarterbacks have to be feeling pretty good coming into this game. It's just about defensively Michigan State's secondary and overall for Oregon. I think you know, they really have to step it up. So, it's going to be an entertaining game with a lot of points. If you like offense, you are going to want to tune in, I think, this Saturday night.
Definitely. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is both teams have new cornerbacks. Both teams have a set of new corners. So I think there will be not as many runs. You talked about Freeman. I totally agree. I don't think we'll be seeing him burst through the defensive line and the offensive line for Oregon, creating all these gaps. I think they'll try to go outside and utilize their speed on the flanks as much as possible. So I'd expect some big plays from him to come on screen passes, and I'd expect Oregon to keep testing Michigan State downfield. Then we'll see whether the Russell Wilson comparison holds up.
Yeah, we certainly will. And, you know, looking at Vernon Adams and his stature, it is very comparable to Russell Wilson. And looking at some of the footage from that Eastern Washington football game, I mean, you can definitely see the comparisons, and they are legit comparisons between Russ and Vernon Adams. So exciting stuff, though, man. Really can't wait for this Saturday. Going to be a fantastic game. All right, folks, let's transition now. I want to really briefly talk about the NBA. We haven't talked about our favorite sport in a while, Isaac. I certainly missed it, and the only reason we're talking about it today is because the NBA has decided to make changes to the way in which it seeds its playoff teams. Now, the NBA Board of Governors unanimously approved changes to playoff seeding and qualification procedures effective with the 2015-16 year. As a part of the modifications, the 8 playoff teams in each conference will be seeded in order of their regular season record. Most recently, if you remember, you know, this is the way it's been for a while now, every division winner was guaranteed a top 4 seed in its respective conference regardless of its record, but did not receive home court advantage if its playoff opponent had a better record. Isaac, this is long overdue because we see so many teams far too often who play in terrible divisions, win the division, but are yet seeded high when they shouldn't. So I think this is long overdue. I think it'll make the league more competitive because teams will come out and say, all right, our regular season record has to be polished if we want to set ourselves up for an end-of-the-year solid seeding. So I think at the end of the day, this is a good thing for the NBA. And again, it's long overdue for me.
It's great news because when you look at last year, it totally changed the ramifications of the playoffs because Portland won the 4th seed by winning that Northwest division. And then San Antonio was relegated to the 6th seed, where if you remember, they had to play the Clippers in the first round, lost in 7 games. So if that wasn't the case, San Antonio would have been the 5 seed. We would have seen San Antonio versus Memphis in the first round. And then we would have seen the Clippers versus Portland. Who knows who would have came out of that San Antonio-Memphis season or series. Golden State could have had a much tougher road to the finals. Mm-hmm. Long overdue. And the divisions still make tons of sense. If you're one thing about the NBA scheduling is you play four games against teams in your division, three against teams in your conference who aren't in your division, and then two from teams from the other conference. So the divisions still make tons of sense, but that rule was totally nonsensical. I'm happy they got rid of it.
Yeah, I certainly am too. And I think in a way, though, it will take a bit of luster off division winners at the end of the day because, I mean, yeah, you get a banner. You get a banner, you get to hang up. I mean, if you win your division, you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, as far as your record goes, I think that should weigh more because that's your entire body of work at the end of the day. So, and again, we've seen divisions that are just, bad. So
Eastern Conference, baby.
Yeah, the Eastern Conference. Yeah, it's tough to watch sometimes. It's certainly tough to watch sometimes. All right, and I got to address this one. Brandon Marshall, of course, a former wide receiver for the Chicago Bears, now with the New York Jets. He said Tuesday that many players in the NFL believe race played a role in Patriots QB Tom Brady's four-game suspension being lifted. He said, quote, the race card. There are a lot of players out there that believe that white players, specifically at the quarterback position, are treated differently. Now, again, he made these comments as a part of a panel discussion on Showtime's Inside the NFL. The 10-year veteran, Marshall, is a regular on the weekly show. And Deflategate naturally was a hot topic on the season's first show. I'm interested to see his full comments because I certainly will tune in and go to my Showtime account and check out that. But I really believe that Brandon Marshall, sure, I think he worded it a bit wrong for me, Isaac. I think what Brandon Marshall was trying to say was that there is an overall perception in the NFL that when looking at quote-unquote white people who play the game of football in the NFL have, you know, they get a bit of a pass. And I think that black athletes look at that and certainly agree with that notion in the NFL. But at the end of the day, this was not one of those cases, Brandon. I feel like athletes play the race card a little too much at times. And I think Brandon Marshall, he didn't put across the message that he was trying to make, I think, clearly as he could have in this sit down on Inside the NFL. Because at the end of the day, let's not forget, Tom Brady, he got the hammer put to him by Roger Goodell. He got suspended initially for four games. Race had nothing to do with that. If your statement holds true in this whole Tom Brady investigation, Tom Brady, it wouldn't have went to court. It wouldn't have went that far at the end of the day. So for me, this was not one of those cases. And I think Brandon Marshall, again, he was not clear with what he was trying to convey with that statement.
Yeah, his overarching point makes sense. But when you look at this specific instance, you and I talked about Tom Brady was punished very severely. And then
overpunished,
it was
lifted
because at the end of the day, the NFL had no evidence against him, no hard evidence. So, no, this isn't one of these cases. I know what he's trying to say, but maybe wait until a different case because not well-timed and not well-stated, at least at face value. I haven't read the full comments either.
Yeah, I definitely want to check out the episode itself because they actually had Boomer Esiason on Jim Rome this morning, and Boomer is a part of Inside the NFL, and Boomer totally didn't agree with Brandon Marshall's comments, and he also believes that they were a bit foggy at the end of the day. So definitely wanted to get, which we'll push to tomorrow, but Texas, Charlie Strong, head coach of the Texas Longhorns college football team. I tell you what, he was not happy with what happened this weekend against Notre Dame. He has now decided to make his wide receivers coach the offensive coordinator now and has demoted the co-offensive coordinators of the team. Overreaction? We'll chat about that on tomorrow's show. Again, folks, I chat with Anthony Iannone right here at the WKRTV studios at 2:30, 30 minutes from now. Again, folks, if you miss it, you can catch it tomorrow night at 10 p.m. or 10:30 p.m. on WKRTV. We pushed our time back 30 minutes. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Thanks so much to Justin Wise, sports editor for the Oregon Daily Emerald, for joining me on today's show. Take care, folks. We'll be back at it tomorrow. And be easy, people.